of resistance resonates so clearly in many oppressed nations today. That's Yemen, that's Palestine, etc.
Yes, without a doubt. This is, first I want to thank the guest in Cape Town. I benefited from his words. But yes, resistance is a very key aspect in succeeding in manifesting Imam Hussein's attributes. But the issue is that why don't the Yemeni cause or the Palestinian cause, why don't they receive more support than what they're receiving now? And the answer is because people are scared. And here we are failing to some degree. The people in the UK, for example, are scared to speak their mind. Most of the mosques in the UK are controlled by the Charity Commission of the King. And so they have a say in what things to say in the mosque and what things not to say. So they can't invite any speaker. And these charity commissions pay annual sums of charity to these centres. But on the other side, they control them. What can you say? What can't you say? And if you say it, we'll list you off, for example. But in Karbala, there's one comparison. The 30,000 army, most of them loved Hussein. The 30,000 in the enemy camp, in their hearts, they knew Imam Hussein was Haq. But they were scared. They were scared to speak out. They were scared for their families. They were scared to die. They were scared to lose wealth. So they went with the status quo. Today, the same in the UK, in America, in Europe, in Australia. Muslims are scared to speak the truth. And this is where we're failing. They're scared to speak of Yemen and the cause in Yemen. They're scared to speak about Palestine and the atrocities against the Palestinians and so on and so forth. Yes, there are some successes we have, for example, with Iran, with Hezbollah and other places, but the masses are not supporting the main cause, you know, actively with their limbs, with their mouths, because they're scared on the whole. And these people, this dua of Ziyarat al-Arba'een is saying because they're drowned in the worldly life. They're arrogant. The dua says they're clothed by the whims of their soul. Even though at heart they believe Imam Hussein alayhi salam to be the truth. But they don't speak out. And then one clause says that these people, Askhataka, have dissatisfied you, O Allah. And these people, Askhata, Askhata Nabi Yak, they've dissatisfied your prophet. Then it says, okay, what was the source of this dissatisfaction? What have they done? The clause ends, Wa ata'a, they obeyed ibadaka min ibadaka or ibadaka ahla shiqaq wa nifaq wa hamalat al awzar, because they obeyed people who were for disunity and disunifying the masses. They obeyed people who were hypocrites. They obeyed people who were drowned in sin. And that's why it's important. Where do Muslims live? You have to live under a guardianship which isn't anti-Islam. And if you live under a guardianship like the Rishi Sunaks of the day, the Bidens, and so on and so forth, you're submitting to their guardianship. A part of your taxes is contributing to their defense sector, which by default is contributing to the blood of many Muslims around the world. You are contributing to education, which is totally against and contrary to Islam, with your taxes. Submitting to a non-Islamic or anti-Islamic guardianship has many spiritual side effects. And ultimately, sooner or later, it may end your fate in a very negative way. So migration is one possibility. Or you shouldn't be comfortable. You have to stand up. You have to go against the ruling authorities. It doesn't matter if they cut off your supplies and the benefits that they give you. You try to fight against all the manifestations of oppression, and try to do it with utmost sincerity and khulus.
Mr. Sokolovich, I want to turn our attention to a different aspect of all of this, and that's what mainstream media and the way they cover an event with such a magnitude. Yes. So, for example, if some ridiculous cause with a rainbow flag and a couple of hundred people
yes.
were marching somewhere, that would get adequate and sufficient coverage.
Yes.
But at an event like this, 30 million people, mainstream media, it keeps silent. It's as if Westerners don't know or shouldn't know about these commemorations. I'm sure you're not surprised about this double standard that we're seeing with regards to mainstream media, but I want to get your take on that as well.
Yes, well, I'm not a media expert. You should answer the question much better than me. But now you've asked it, I'll try to give a reply, but by no means I may be wrong. In relation to the mainstream media networks like, let's say, CNN or Fox News, or even if they were to mention or to praise, we have to worry a lot, because being praised by the enemy is something we have to worry about. It means we're not doing something right. We shouldn't be complacent with such movements. These movements are very good, and they'll become more and more populated as the years pass by, inshallah. However, at the same time, there are elements which may arise in these movements which may be against the philosophy, the Husseini philosophy, and we have to be careful. So when mainstream networks praise them or speak in a positive way, we always have to take it with a pinch of salt. However, there are a growing number of networks, smaller networks, which are covering them. My humble advice to them is to try to do their best so that the world can see, but also not only just seeing the movement, but benefiting from the lessons that can be taken from this movement and how to incorporate it in one's daily life.
All right, thanks a lot, Islamic scholar Mr. Farooq Sokolovich, for joining us in our studios. We all benefited
very much
from your words and your interpretations. So we're going to cross over now to our guest, Mr. Gaddafi, in Cape Town once again. Mr. Gaddafi, Imam Hussein, as we've been mentioning right now, is relevant today. That's because he stood for justice. And as long as justice stands, his message and his sacrifices will also be alive. A guest that we've spoke to over, the course of all the years that we've been covering the Battle of Karbala phrased this very brilliantly, and I've highlighted that, and I've kept that with me over the years, and that Imam Hussein was the ultimate freedom seeker, and his message is so cosmically alive. Give us your thoughts, please.
Indeed, the message of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, it is a message that will live the depths of time. And therefore, his brother Imam Hassan alayhi salam is quoted to have said, "La yawmuk ka yawmuk ya Hussein," that there is no day like your day, O Hussein. And that we see the significance of the statement and the statement that you have quoted, that since 61 of the Hijrah, and we find our in the year in which the massacre of Karbala took place, and today we find ourselves in 1445 of the Hijrah, 1,400 years later, we see that not only has the great trek of Najaf to Karbala, that it has continued to take place, even though there were various years of oppression and subjugation under the likes of Saddam Hussein, for example, and that after 1,400 years of oppression, subjugation, and all kinds of propaganda to write out and wipe out the sacrifice of Imam Hussein and the significance of Karbala, this message and this movement has only grown. And therefore, today we find that 50 million people that they converge on Karbala to give their respect and to recognize Imam Hussein and the message of Karbala. Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, and his sacrifice, this is the epitome of justice. This is the height of sacrifice. And it has reached the depths of penetrating the hearts of all freedom-loving people. And therefore, as long as there is injustice in the world, as long as there is an oppression somewhere in any corner of the world, the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, it continues to grow and continue to inspire people that they rise up against oppression and that, like Imam Hussein alayhi salam, they take a stand for liberty, for liberation, and for justice. And therefore we see, and I think that this will continue as we saw for the last 1,400 years, it will continue in this trajectory, that this message, it will only penetrate more and more hearts. And therefore, if the media, mainstream media, doesn't cover, for example, the great trek of Arba'in, and that they try to hide this message, the message of Hussein alayhi salam and this message of justice, the heights and the epitome of justice, this message of humanity, it continues to penetrate the hearts, and it has reached each and every country across the globe, and more people, that our hearts submit to this message, that we cannot but surrender to the magnanimity of the light that emanates from Imam al-Hussein and that emanates from Karbala. And inshallah al-Azim, a time comes in the time of the final Imam, and that the entire world, that we submit in love and in humility to the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam. And so I do agree that this message and this name of Imam Hussein, it is the height of justice and the height of liberation. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Sir Coordinator of the Zakzaki Foundation, South Africa, Zainul Abidin Gaddafi, joining us from Cape Town. For those of you viewers who are just joining us now, the city of Karbala in Iraq is hosting millions of Muslims from across the world who are commemorating Arba'in, but it's not just those who are in Karbala or en route to the holy Iraqi city. We're seeing various cities across the world where mourners are commemorating the day of Arba'in. That's 40 days following the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Millions of Muslims, including Iranians, have marched for days to join the mourning ceremonies as Muslims see this as an opportunity to keep alive the movement of Karbala, which has been described as a movement against terrorism, against fascism and despotism. Imam Hussein and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD while fighting courageously for justice against the much larger army of the then tyrant ruler of the time, Yazid ibn Muawiyah. Joining us now from Srinagar to offer us more insight on the significance of this day, we have executive member of the Assembly of Scholars of Jammu and Kashmir, Mr. Sayyid Mudassir Rizvi. Mr. Rizvi, welcome to the program. Give us your perspective, first of all, on the significance of the Battle of Karbala, the importance of this day, the day of Arba'in, and the mourners' march toward the holy city of Karbala to keep the message of Karbala alive, the Battle of Karbala alive.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. First of all, I thank you for inviting me on the show. I pay my sincere condolences to the whole Ummah on the 40th day of martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions. See, so far as your question is going, I would like to mention that Arba'in commemoration happens every year, and it is raising a message of unity, humanity, values, and sincere efforts to the way of Allah day by day. You see millions of people coming all over the world to this place. This is clear message that it is the voice of humanity. This is the voice of human respect. And I see historically, Arba'in War goes back to the first visitors of Imam Hussein in Islam. Janab Zainab Kubra Salamullah alayhi, the sister of Imam Hussein, the son of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, Imam Hussein al-Abdin alayhi salam, holy companion of the Hazrat Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Jabir ibn Abdullah Ansari. This is the movement created by those who gave sacrifices in the battlefield of Karbala. After the Karbala, they moved to Kufa, they moved to Sham, they see every hardship in their way. And finally, they have created the symbol of unity when they came on the 40th day to the shrines of these martyrs, the graves of these martyrs on the 40th day of Arba'in, which is known as Martyr Day, 40th Martyr Day of Imam Hussein and his holy company. You see, the roots are created by those great sacrifice holders of the humanity. And that's why there is the message of sincerity, message of humanity, message of human respect coming out of this. You see, if you have traveled, inshallah, I have traveled 5 times in the Arabian world. I have myself seen so many people which are not of the faith of Shia or Muslim. They are attracted by the sacrifice, human value, understanding, justice. These are human values. They are attracted by these things. They come for the Imam Hussein, love of Imam Hussein, alayhi salatu wasalam. They come there, they see this is as the resistance against cruelty. They see this standing against the oppression. They see it as the strength against the present Yazid of the time. That is why they are attracted towards the Karbala on the 40th day of martyrdom of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, which is known as Arba'een. You see, when one comes to this walk on the Arba'een day, it is not only the aspect of social value, it is aspect of personal, individual value. It gives you two-way step. One is towards the individual growth and strength. Second is the social strength. On individual level, you see your iman is going to make a shining approach in your life. Your level and your coordination, your steps towards the Creator, which Imam Hussain showed in the Battle of Karbala. He sacrificed everything for being the obedient servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. While traveling towards Karbala from Najaf, while traveling towards Karbala from any other place of Iraq, whether it is Nasiriyya, Diwaniya, Basara, any place you travel from, and every step you count towards nearness towards Allah on individual level. You understand, Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam came with a family, with children, with sister Imam Zainab Kubra salamullahi alayhi, Imam Ummu Kulthum. For what? For saving the message of Allah, for being obedient servant of Allah, for being on the path of Islam and Quran. That is why every traveler, every pilgrim, when he travels towards Karbala, every step reminds of this individual approach. And at the same time, he meets thousands of people all around the world. There he understands what Imam Hussain alayhi salam stands for. Everyone comes to that message. Everyone comes to that human approach which is needed. Everyone allows justice system which Imam Hussain alayhi salam sacrificed life for, which he stood against oppression and cruelty of that time. And that is the message which all humans need to understand. Karbala stands for liberty, value, justice system. And every truth-loving person, every justice-loving person, every sincere approach-loving system comes to Imam Hussain alayhi salam with this approach.
Thank you, Mr. Rizvi. Stay with us. We're now joined by journalist and political analyst Munir Ahmad, who's joining us from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad. Munir Ahmad, what lessons can be extracted from the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's stance for modern-day society?
Great event of Arba'een like to unite Muslims and also like to highlight the sacrifices of Imam Hussain alayhi salam and their companions and Ahl-e Bayt. And it's a lesson for every Muslim that even you have to sacrifice your life, your family, your colleagues, the people around you, the loved ones, you shall not go down to any oppression and like any cruelty and any and it is also a lesson today for us as like when we are facing a lot of oppression from different powers. They quote unquote call themselves a superpower, and unilateral decision-making is being done all over the world. And whatever decision they make, and they go for it. And the Muslim world at the moment are suffering a lot in the hands of the superpowers and the NATO countries. And we have seen their hegemonic decision-making. So this is the lesson that we get from Imam Hussein alayhi salam's sacrifice, that we shall stand against all such kind of decisions they make for us. And they have to be ready to sacrifice their lives, and people have to unite. And when the people walk towards Karbala, it means they are willing to sacrifice. And the walk is the journey of devotion and selflessness, basically. And it is basically a walk towards the message of Islam and the message of Prophet, peace be upon him. And the examples set by Imam Hussein alayhi salam certainly is a big lesson for Muslims of all times. And also at this moment, it's very crucial when different powers are trying to squeeze Muslims and grab their resources and to segregate them from each other and trying to create conflicts between them or among them, and making the Muslim forums ineffective. It's time to learn from such kind of messages that they are in the history of Islam, that people shall come forward and be willing to sacrifice everything in the path of their faith, and to spread the message. And I'm really glad to note that in the last 20 years, the Arba'een walk has really juvenile the process of unity and peace among different people from different countries and different sects, and they all come together. I learned that more than 40 countries, people from 40 countries come there and walk towards Karbala. It is a great message even to all the present day the superpowers type countries, that Muslims have awakened again. And as Allama Iqbal has said, that if Tehran could be the Geneva of Muslim world, the entire fate of the Muslim world could be changed. And I believe in the leadership of in the leadership of Iran and the followers of Husseiniyat, they are marching towards a new destiny, to discover a new destiny for the world and for themselves as well. It would certainly strengthen the wave of Muslim unity, brotherhood, and also like a cultural and social exchange, that I believe. And all these components of the exchanges would certainly bring a big and stronger block of Muslim world. And it would also rejuvenate OIC and such kind of Muslim World's Forum. And I believe that all together, Muslims can have more rigorous policies and more rigorous approach towards the destiny. That is certainly the message of Allah that was projected by Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and sacrificed their lives and their family in Karbala. Karbala is big metaphor for the message of Islam.
Well, that's Sir Rizvi in Srinagar. What does it say about the transcending character of Imam Hussein when we see so many ethnic groups and creeds and sects and colors participating in these ceremonies and in these morning processions from the morning processions of the first 10 days of Muharram leading up to Ashura and also in continuation of that leading up to the day of Arba'in, which we're seeing today?
See, what I understand by this Arba'in day, it is borders are shrinking in the name of Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam. Superpowers, so-called superpowers, have untold, they have divided human in the name of religion, in the name of region, in the name of language, color, and all this. But I see Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam, whether it is Ashura, whether this is the day of Arba'in, it shrinks the borders of human differences. All the humanity loving, all the justice loving humans are attracted by the sacrifice of Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam. And that is the biggest message on the holy day of Arba'in when pilgrims come across from thousands of places, from different places, from unknown places. You don't understand. For any such thing which they get as a worldly thing or material thing. They sacrifice worldly things. They have, everybody has to pay for this. Say, for example, at least $800, $900, $400, they are paying it out of their money and they are coming for the sacrifice, this holy sacrifice. Why? They see it as a message of humanity. They see it as a message of justice system. And everybody coming to this place, it is not wajib, it is not obligatory. And when a non-Muslim, knower of Muslim Islam sees this, he says, is this obligatory for a Shia to come there or a Muslim to come there? When he learns that it is not obligatory, it is out of their own love they come for Muslim Islam. It gives a message that world really, the borders are shrinking these days because Imam Hussain alayhi salam created this manifestation of justice. You see, all the oppressed nations in the present world, they see their savior in the Arba'in. They see their savior, the people gathering on the Arba'in. They come there, they convey their message, whether it is Palestine, whether it is other place where oppression is going on. They are dealt with in their mockets, their messages are conveyed there. Their operation is conveyed to all Muslims and all people, all other creeds of the humanity which are coming there. It is conveyed there. That is why we understand Imam Hussain alayhi salam is the center of attraction, center of reflection of real Islam. On other side, it is reflection of Imam Hussain alayhi salam as the center of human unity. And on the other side, it is the mutual love of humans who love the existence of Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam, because Imam Hussain alayhi salam sacrificed everything he has, whether it was his family, whether it was his companions, whether it was his own respect. Imam Hussain alayhi salam gave that what do we call that respect and sacrificed that respect. It was worldly respect which we discussed, but there was the respect which was in the hands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, which gave Imam Hussain alayhi salam that respect that will remain at the end of day, at the end of human civilization. That true respect was bestowed upon by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam, which today Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam is shining like a star of humanity. And that is why all the nations, all the human races, all the creeds, all the religions, if we understand the real sense, they are attracted by the voice of Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam, by the sacrifice of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. That is why if you travel to Karbala on this very day, you will see everybody, everyone is loving Muhammad Islam with his soul, not by his lips, not by his words, not by his present body,
right,
but his soul and inner values are dealing with Muhammad Islam in the sense that Muhammad Islam sacrificed everything for the love of humanity and love of Islam.
Munir Ahmad, in Islamabad, Imam Hussein's message, it transcends the plains of Karbala and even transcends timelines, borders, and religions, doesn't it? As he stood for something that many can relate to, and that is not giving in to oppression and standing up for what he truly believed in till his last breath.
You are right. The message is very clear, and it's against tyranny of any sort. And besides that, it's also a message of interfaith harmony and intrafaith harmony as well. Because what I foresee, as I earlier mentioned, that in the last 2 decades, I have seen emerging a new sort of Islamic revolution. And I believe that the Arba'een and the concept of the Arba'een and the message of Arba'een would certainly culminate to such kind of world, the Muslim world, without any borders. And I believe I have learned that it's not only the Shia people that goes over there. There are many Hanfi and Sunnis, they also march towards Kaaba because Imam Hussein alayhi salam is also, you know, they respect, they honor, and it's all their faith that Imam Hussein alayhi salam has saved Islam. And if they had not sacrificed their lives, there would have not been the real meaning and message and the features of Islam that we are having at the moment. So I believe we believe that all the Muslim worlds, even if they have their boundaries, geographic boundaries or the borders, but they are united in one thread, and that is Islam. And that is more strengthened by the sacrifices of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And in the coming future, in the near future, I believe that it would certainly strengthen the Muslim world. And on the message of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I believe every people would come forward and they would have a stronger one Muslim Ummah. And based on this sacrifice and this message of that Imam Hussein alayhi salam given to all of us, and we will become a bigger nation, a larger nation, against the tyranny, against all the oppression that we are facing at the moment. And that is the only solution for us at the moment to survive for the survival of our nation states. If we come together, then only we can be a strong power to face the oppression and tyranny. And otherwise, if we will not learn from the message, then believe me, there would be no end to the tyranny that we are imposed, that is imposed on us. So we need to learn. We need to wipe off all the differences that we have. And that was, I believe, created by the others. And the divide that we have, such kind of events, and I call it pilgrimage, and certainly it is, and it would enhance the relationship and the Muslim bond between the people. And it is increasingly becoming larger every year. Last year, I think more than 3 million people from 40 countries came over to march towards the destiny, I believe. And this destiny is not else than against, standing against tyranny that we are facing at the moment. Yes, please.
Okay, Mr. Rizvi in Srinagar, Mr. Ahmed in Islamabad, stay with us. We're now going to cross over to our correspondent, Gisu Misha Ahmadi, who's joining us now from the holy Iraqi city of Karbala, which is hosting the millions of mourners and pilgrims who are commemorating the day of Arba'in. That's 40 days following the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. Gisu, talk to us about the atmosphere and mood over there right now.
Well, Badia, as you mentioned, I'm just a few meters away from the holy shrine of Imam Hussein, where a large number of pilgrims are actually have gathered to take part in the mourning ceremonies of Arba'in, which means 40th. It's the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam, a much revered religious figure. Of course, your guests have been elaborating that for our viewers, but as far as what I'm seeing here right now is concerned, I believe I did mention that the governor of Karbala has said that he expects about 30 million pilgrims to come to Karbala this year. Let me clarify that, since this is a very large number, just for our viewers to understand what we mean by 30 million pilgrims. It's not that these people are staying in Karbala. These are people who enter the city. They come here to the holy shrine of Imam Hussein. They also visit the shrine of Abul Fazl Abbas, Imam Hussein's half-brother, which is just a few hundred meters away, and the area between, which is called Bain al-Haramain. And afterwards, they visit other holy sites here in Karbala. So it's not that these people stay here, but this is the number of people who have come to Karbala this year to spend Arba'in here, to pay their respects, renew their allegiance with Imam Hussein and the values that he stood up for and was martyred for, and then they go back home.
So we're seeing the large number of mourners and pilgrims who are gathering there. You mentioned earlier when we spoke to you, a lot of the Iranian mourners, they make the entire trip on foot. Other mourners, they come to Najaf and then they walk to the city of Karbala. That's a four-day trek. It's very difficult, as you mentioned as well. What is the key motivation for the pilgrims to make this difficult trip to Karbala?
Well, Badia, basically what motivates these people, all of the people that you see here, you're probably seeing the images, what we're sending to you from Karbala. All these people, the only thing that motivates them is the love of Imam Hussein and the love of Ahlul Bayt, the house of Prophet Muhammad. And when we talk about the love of Imam Hussein, it means understanding what he stood up for, understanding what he fought for. He fought against oppression. He fought for justice. And the people who come here, they come here to renew their allegiance with Imam Hussein as a symbol of a person who fought for justice and fought against oppression. They are here to renew their allegiance. So the main motivation for all these people here is to remind themselves, probably, Bardia, that they need to hold on to that rope which pulls all of us together towards one goal, and that is becoming a better person and fighting against oppression and standing up for justice, fighting for what's right.
One last question for you, Gisu, before we leave you. I'm sure you've had the chance to talk to many of the mourners and the pilgrims as you've been on this this long trek yourself. We're seeing how passionate the mourners are about these processions, but apart from you know, the sorrow tone, the sorrowful tone of these gatherings. There's also a sense of pride and how proud the mourners and devoted they feel to this journey to Karbala and to pledge allegiance to their Imam, the Sayyid al-Shuhada. Can you explain for us these feelings of passion and devotion and pride that exists among the mourners?
Well, Badia, I didn't quite catch the question. I heard the word Karbala a number of times. So I'm just assuming that you're asking about the different places that these mourners are going. Like I said, they come here, they pay their respects, they say Assalamu alaikum, Ya Abu Abdullah, when they reach here, the holy shrine of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And of course, then they visit the other shrine, which I mentioned before, the area which is called Bain al-Haramain, and then there are also a number of other holy sites, not just in Karbala, but in other cities as well. In Najaf, there are a number of holy sites that they have to visit, and also in Samarra and Qazimain. Basically, for Muslims, Baghdad, Samarra, Qazimain, and Najaf and Karbala, the entire country is considered a holy place to visit.
All right, thanks a lot, Gisu. Prestige Gisu Mishamadi joining us from the holy Iraqi city of Kabul. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you later on in the day as well. Let's go back to our guest in Srinagar, Mr. Sayyid Mudassir Rizvi. Mr. Rizvi, let's once again delve into the message of the Battle of Kabul. There's a recurring theme in this, this last stand of Imam Hussein. And one side of it is what Imam Hussein stood for. The other side of it is the stance of the tyrant of the time, Yazid ibn Muawiyah. That's the stance of the side of oppression and despotism. And that theme is actually a recurring theme throughout history, which has been redefined over and over again. And with it, once again, the Battle of Karbala can be revisited as well. Okay, unfortunately, I believe we've lost that connection with our guest, Mr. Mudassir Rizvi in Srinagar, as my colleagues work to reestablish that connection. We're going to go to some of the live images that we're getting from various cities across the globe, where millions of pilgrims and mourners are celebrating, or rather commemorating, the martyrdom anniversary, the 40 days following the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, grandson of Prophet Muhammad and the third Shia Imam. Those are live images that we're getting from the city of Karbala, which is hosting millions of Muslims from across the world, commemorating the day of Arba'in, which means 40th in Arabic, literally. And the Iraqi officials have stated that the number estimated or anticipated to be visiting the holy city of Kabul is around 30 million. That number is staggering itself. People from all walks of life are converging on the holy city to join the event marking 40 days following the anniversary of Imam Hussein. Millions of Muslim pilgrims, including Iranians, have marched for days to join the morning ceremony. As our correspondent, Gisu, who we were earlier speaking to, who is actually at the holy city of Karbala, was mentioning the many various and different points that are so important on this day, which are visited by the pilgrims during these special days. I believe we have our guest, Mr. Mudassir Rizvi, once again with us now. Sir, it's great to have you with us once again. We were talking about how the Battle of Karbala is redefined and revisited in different eras and different times. What parallels, in your opinion, can be drawn with what's taking place in the region right now? And also, if you may, talk to us about the aspect of what Yazid stands for and what he stood for in the Battle of Karbala. Yazid is also a recurring theme throughout history.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Thank you. See, it symbolizes peace in that time. And Imam Hussain al-Islam stands against it is the present time. You see, what was that tyrant? What was that year? For the falsehood. He wants to give humans to obey him. He wants to divide the
strategy. Okay, unfortunately, we've not established that connection with Mr. Rizvi. I'm not sure if we'll be hearing from him later on in the program. However, thanks to the contributions you made to our program, Sayyid Mudassir Rizvi. We're now going to cross over to political analyst Kerim Sharara, joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mr. Sharara, welcome to the program. I'm going to start off with the same question that we offered to all of our guests here, and that is your perspective on the significance of the Battle of Karbala and also the significance and importance of this day of Arba'in that we're seeing so many pilgrims and mourners flocking to the holy city of Karbala to once again remember the Battle of Imam Hussein.
Well, the significance, where can one start? I mean, the Battle of Karbala in and of itself, if you exclude the events that happened before the actual battle, it was only an hour to give or take. But this 1 hour brought life to an entire nation, I mean, we've been commemorating the Battle of Karbala and the happenings and the things that happened within that battle, what happened afterwards, and throughout, I mean, for 14 centuries so far. And the very fact that we've been able to draw so many lessons from just this 1 hour is, I think, unique in terms of culture. If you take the themes of Karbala, I mean, we as Shia Muslims rely heavily on symbolism when we take into account our daily lives. So the main theme, in my opinion, there are many themes, of course, in Karbala, but the main theme is one of oppression versus and resisting oppression. So you have oppression and you have resistance. In our day and age, and of course, this has brought life to the Ummah over the ages. So this has allowed Muslims to resist oppression and to breathe new life into their nation and to just continue to subsist despite the many difficulties that we've had to endure over the past centuries. So if you take this day and age and you take into effect the fact that imperialism has managed to ravage us so much, and yet we've continued to subsist, and yet we've continued to resist. Just look at Palestine and the lessons we've been able to draw from the Palestinian resistance, and how the Palestinian resistance fighters themselves are commemorating Karbala on a daily basis. Just look at their wills, look at their determination, look at their actual written wills. Imam Hussein, Sayyida Zainab, Imam Ali, their descendants, they figure they're very much present in their day-to-day lives. And we're not just talking about Shia Muslims, we're talking about Sunni Muslims, we're talking about Christians, we're talking about anyone who is actually free in this world. Anyone who has freedom, anyone who wishes to resist oppression can find actual lessons and take comfort in what happened to Imam Hussein, and the fact that despite what happened to Imam Hussein, despite the material, physical death and martyrdom of Imam Hussein, this death, this blood brought life into the Ummah. So although you have a material death before you, this death brought life into generation upon generation of people.
Mr. Shadan, in many views, it's not just a religious movement. It can also be seen as a social movement as well. How much can a justice-seeking society learn from this day?
Well, like I said, it's about what lessons you want to draw from Karbala. So it's about the lessons that you want to draw, and the main
theme
here is
that you have. And the perspective that everybody can have with regards to this day.
Well, like I said, it's about the lessons that you want to draw. So take resisting oppression, for example. This entails, this isn't just about resisting oppression. This also would lead you to believe in an entire system of values and beliefs, so as to be able to resist oppression and to practice resistance and as best as you can. So to practice resistance, you would need to have unity. To practice resistance, you would need to have a societal structure that would enable you to practice this resistance and do away with oppression. So on a societal level, us Shias, for example, the lessons that we draw from Karbala on a daily basis is that when you have someone like Imam Hussein, when you have a leader, when you have a central figure in Islam, one of the five people of the Qisa, so someone who is very well known to all Muslims, ready to lay down their lives in order to make the Ummah breathe life into the Ummah, then you take heart knowing that your leaders need to be on that same level. So this brings to mind what Sayyid Hassan said a few years ago many people objected to this, of course, because this is something of great significance. Of course, their objections were not well-founded. When he said that Sayyid Khamenei is the Hussein of our age, it's not on a daily basis, it's not every day that you hear someone with the significance that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah holds, not only in the not only in Lebanon, but also in the Arab Islamic nation. It's not every day that you hear someone say something of such significance. So what does this mean? It means that Imam Khamenei is not only the one holding the banner for Islam and the one reviving Islam at this age, but since we've drawn lessons from Karbala in the past, and like I said, we're heavily reliant on symbolism, we need to take into mind what the Kufis of the past did, and this would necessitate us to stand next to Imam Khamenei, to stand next to the Hussein of our age, to resist oppression by standing next to him, whatever happens. We do not want a repeat of the people of the Kufa. We do not want a repeat of people who would at one instance say that they're ready to lay down their lives and please come so that we may be at your side and so that we may take so that we may enact justice, and that once Imam Hussein comes they would just turn against him, and all for petty pleasures and all for this dunya and all for this worldly life. So one lesson that we can draw from this is that no matter how tightly the grip of imperialism, the grip of oppression may hold you, you must stick with your leader. You must stick with justice. You must stick for all that is right in the world. You must stick up for what is good. Because if you, just like another symbol, Muslim ibn Aqil, when he came to the city and had rounded up a sizable number of people to revolt against the wali of Al-Kufa, they left him. So it's not just about everyone taking the decision to be with or against someone. This also means that we, on an, this also reflects the significance of us resisting oppression and standing for justice on an individual level.
Mr. Sharada, resistance is one of the key derivatives from the Battle of Karbala. Would you agree that that lesson, that key point of resistance, it resonates so clearly in many oppressed nations, many other countries in the region today, such as Yemen, such as Lebanon, such as Palestine?
One of the, this brings up, I mean, your question brings to mind something that Shahid Mutahhari once said when he was talking about the significance of identity. And he wasn't, he didn't believe in the idea that identity was created from language and from culture. Just he didn't believe in such things as the founding principles of identity. For Shahid Mutahhari, the founding principle of identity was shared pain among people, was shared pain and shared aspirations among people. So when you take that into account, the very fact that people can share pain and... So look, for example, at Eduardo Agnelli, who came from Italy and left all worldly pleasures in order to come be with the... Just stand next to what he thought was justice. Look at the Algerian Revolution, for example, in which Frantz Fanon took part. Frantz Fanon, someone from Martinique, someone who had lived through the oppression of imperialism, seeking to stand next to justice in Algeria. Why? Because he had also lived under French oppression, just as the Algerians did. So for us, people with with a remarkable interchange of culture in the region, I mean, we have a shared history, we have a shared language. So the very fact that people, and I'm just talking about the region, I'm not talking about people from abroad who also share these aspirations. So the very fact that people in the region can stand next to Palestine, stand next to Yemen, just because they see the oppression that Yemenis, that Palestinians, that the oppression that imperialism has wrought on the region, this allows us to band together, because this creates a shared identity. And it's interesting that Fanon had also said through his experience with the Algerian Revolution that it's not just the... So if you want to combine what Mutahhari and Fanon said, for example, it's not just that shared aspirations and shared pain can create the founding basis for culture. It's also that a struggle in the face of imperialism also creates a new culture. The struggle against U.S. interference in the region not only binds people together in this shared struggle, it creates a shared identity of resistance. So in this day and age, it's interesting that resistance has come into the foreground as an identity in and of itself, bringing people together. So despite our many differences around the world, if you can be in the US or in the UK, but the very fact that you're resisting imperialism creates a shared identity between you and I. And it's interesting how many lessons you can draw from Karbala. I mean, sure, across history, you have a number, it's usually theory that transcends practice. So theory informs practice, and usually you have an overarching theory. Say it's if you have a theory that says, if you want to grade it out of 10, so it's a 10 out of 10 theory. But if you want to practice this theory, you'd only be able to practice like 5 or 6 out of 10 of this theory. But in Karbala, it's actually quite the opposite. It's practice. It's the practice of Imam Hussein and his martyrdom that has informed so much theory, so many lessons, that we're still drawing lessons from this on a day-to-day basis, even in our day and age. I mean, it's been 14 centuries, and we're still drawing lessons from Karbala. That is unique.
Unique indeed. Mr. Sharar, Imam Hussein's message, as you just alluded to, transcends the plains of Karbala and even transcends timelines and borders and religions. So what does this say about the transcending character of Imam Hussein when we see many ethnic groups and sects and creeds also participating in these ceremonies?
Well, it just goes to show that value